You're listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Associate Professor of Pastoral Theology and Leadership.
What does it mean to be involved in the mission of the church? What kind of posture do we develop in order to serve in the church? What does it mean to actually serve the church? And how do we do that from within our own personalities, within our own giftings, and even out of our sex? Today's author helps us to answer that question by looking at some of the examples of women in the mission of the church. Today's guest is Dr. Annika Stassen. Dr. Stassen is Associate Professor of Humanities and History at Indiana Wesleyan University. I met Dr. Stassen personally a couple of weeks ago, and today's conversation was a really enjoyable follow-up to our first in-person meeting. In today's episode, you're going to hear a reflection on some of what it means for women to serve in the church, and how women have served in the church throughout its time in history. You're going to hear a bit of a deeper reflection on Ida B. Wells, a woman who is well known certainly in American history, and how faith was such an inspiration to her. Today's episode is for people who are exploring what it means to serve in the mission of the church in a variety of contexts, perhaps even in your home. If you are a senior pastor, if you are exploring a call to ministry, if you are a staff pastor, if you are one who is simply active and involved in the church in a way that makes the mission of the church go forward, then today's episode is for you. Thanks so much for tuning in. Stay tuned for a word from our sponsor, and then enjoy the podcast.
We are Wesley, and you belong here.
My name is Victoria Borum, and I am Wesley.
I'm Lenny Lucetti, and I am Wesley.
My name is Chris, and guess what? I am Wesley.
Hi, I'm Tina Shappett, and I am Wesley.
We recognize this beautiful diversity that the Lord has called together that is Wesley.
My name is Corey Merritt, and I am Wesley.
I am Wayne Brown, and I am Wesley.
I am Colleen Durr, and I belong here. You belong here too, because we are Wesley.
Welcome to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Dr. Stassen, we're grateful that you've joined us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Women in the mission of the church, their opportunities and obstacles throughout Christian history. It's fresh off the press from Baker Academic. You are one of the co-authors. And so it's a delight that you're here to share some of your research with us. And I know it comes from an interest both in teaching and also resourcing the church. So maybe I'd start out just by asking you the why question. Why did you set out to write a history of women in Christian ministry and mission?
Yeah, thanks for that question. It really started with my co-author. We were colleagues. Before I taught here at Indiana Wesleyan, I was out at Biola, and that's where Leanne Dubinsky is. And we both have an interest in women in the mission of the church. And she had started giving a bunch of lectures to women in leadership in mission organizations, just tracing how women have had leadership positions over the history of the church. And people, as she was giving these presentations, people just kept asking her, where's the book? But she is not a historian. She's a social scientist and does more contemporary research. And so she brought me on to the project, and I've studied women in various parts of church history and have always just had an interest in that topic, and also an awareness of the fact that historians in the last 30 years have done so much work to reclaim the stories of women, but often those stories don't really get out to your average person in the pews or your average person working in mission. And so my desire, along with Leanne's, was to just find this good scholarship and make it accessible to people. So that's what kind of drew us to this project. And Baker has been a great press to work with, but we really just wanted to bring those stories of women to average readers out there.
Obviously, you've covered a number of characters, and whenever you're doing historical study, you find yourself entering into the lives of the people, right? What's going on around them? What's happening in their mindset? How do they approach the world? What are some of their assumptions and givens? What's brand new? What's challenging to them? So you're getting into their lives in various ways. I know it's an impossible question, but I wanted to ask you, if you could pick one woman who stands out in Christian history in your mind, I'd love for you to tell us about her.
Sure. Thanks for asking that question. And I'm going to tell you about a woman. Ida B. Wells is her name, and she's fairly well known. She's an African-American woman born in 1862, died in 1931. And I first learned about her from someone down my hallway here in the Honors College. Rusty Hawkins does a lot of research on race and religion in America. And so as I was writing this book, I knew I wanted to cover some American women. And so I went over to his office and said, who should I research? And Ida B. Wells was his number one recommendation. And as I learned about her, I could see why. This woman was absolutely amazing. She was born into slavery, but when she was 3 years old, the 14th Amendment was passed. So slavery was no longer legal, but she grew up in an America that it was still very hard to be an African-American woman. Let me tell you one of the things that happened to her. It's kind of like the same story as Rosa Parks. Basically, she was riding a train to work. She was sitting in what's called the ladies' car in the 19th century. They had the ladies' car. It was a nice car. And she got asked to move to the smoking car. And she refused to move. And so the conductor came and forcibly removed her. She ended up bringing a lawsuit against the railroad for discrimination. And amazingly, she won that lawsuit. But then the railroad company took it to court again, and the decision was reversed. And it was in this experience that she just cried out to God. And you can read in her journal, like her prayer, and it just immediately takes you into the heart of this woman. She's this woman that is very committed to her faith, very committed to God, and God gives her strength to get through difficult times. You can read about her crying out to God. And she went on to become what she's most famous for as being an anti-lynching activist. And she was the most well-known person. She had a newspaper that she owned. And so she would write articles about this and try to turn people's minds to this topic and the need to reform, turn people's attention to the fact that it was mostly African-American men who were lynched. You know, in her mind, this was clearly problematic. And she brought this to the attention of a lot of people. And what I think is interesting about Ida B. Wells, too, is that she's really well known in Americanist historian circles. But what's not often known is the extent to which she drew on her faith to get her through hard times. I mean, this is a woman that taught Sunday school in her Presbyterian church. When the young men in her Sunday school came to her one day, there'd been a lynching, and they're like, there's nothing we can do. You know, whatever, it's going to keep on happening. There's nothing we can do. And she just took them to task. And she's like, no, you need to keep fighting against injustice. And so she got them to kind of turn around their attitude. And they ended up founding this organization to help African-American men, particularly, kind of get out of some problematic situations in Chicago. So she was just someone who was constantly taking the bad that was given her and given Black people in this country and using that as an opportunity to keep working as an agent of reconciliation in this country. So I just find her super inspiring. I think there's so many aspects of her life that are really inspiring. So my daughter, Mary Lou, we homeschool our kids. And one of the things they do is they have to dress up like a historical figure. So my daughter, Mary Lou, is like, Mom, you know, you just wrote this book. Who should I dress up as? And so I'm proud to say this last year, she dressed up as Ida B. Wells. So the whole like 19th century get up in a hat and her hair all done. So I think she's cool.
I mean, just that last image is one that expresses for us what education can do. So when we're doing historical research, we're getting into the lives of other people. But honestly, what happens is so often their lives get into us. Mm-hmm. Right? The way that we start to put them on, right? What would they do? How would they approach it? We have eyes to see, or we develop characters that have eyes to see what's happening in our world that we can make a difference on. And just that the fact that not issues, but people get into hearts of people. Mm-hmm. And so she's obviously considering the implications for people that she knows and loves, people that she's probably teaching in Sunday school. And likewise for people who are wanting to make a difference in their own day is, well, what's the challenge that is facing people that you love? How does that conviction become something that doesn't make you just frustrate you, that doesn't just leave you with negative emotions, but how does it get turned, right? Whenever we look at the history of people who have made differences, they were able to channel those things into positive outcomes. And I love that you use the example, of course, of Ida B. Wells and the way that faith crafted in her an approach to transformation, an approach to change that she was going to obviously live out to the fullest of her ability and by the power of God's Spirit at work within her. So you've completed this research, and inevitably what happens in the course of research is sometimes we find what we expect we're going to find, and then other times we find things that we were surprised to find, right? We didn't expect to find something, or we didn't expect to find it to a certain degree or whatever else. And so I wanted to ask you, what was one thing that surprised you as you were writing this book on women in the mission of the church? What was one thing that surprised you?
Mm-hmm. hopefully it's okay. I have two things. So hopefully you'll let me share both. But one of them comes from the early church. And so I always knew that women had a role in the early church. I knew that they were followers of Jesus. I knew that they were telling other people about Jesus. So they were like missionaries and evangelists. But one thing I didn't know was that we think we don't have 100% perfect proof, but historians think that women were serving Eucharist in those early Christian communities. And that was surprising to me because for the rest of church history, it took a very long time for women to be ordained to the priesthood and then be able to serve the Eucharist. Depending on which tradition you come from, you know, this may be a surprising fact to you or not. But to me, I had come from a tradition where women weren't ordained and they didn't serve the Eucharist. But what we find when we look at those earliest house churches, you know, keep in mind that these were communities that were meeting in people's homes. There weren't churches yet. So this is just the generation right after Jesus. And what would often happen is that it was wealthy people whose homes would be the ones that you would meet in because they were bigger. And often, if it was a woman's home, it was often that she was a widow, that her husband had passed away and she still retained this larger home. And so then as the head of that household, she would have been the one kind of overseeing the meeting of the church. Maybe there would have been an apostle visiting and giving the teaching for that church meeting. But we think that she probably would have been the one who would have been distributing the elements, the bread and the wine. So that was very much a surprise to me. And it seems from the research that I've done that that practice didn't last a super long time, that pretty soon that got turned over to the male leadership. But I think it's significant to see that in those earliest house churches, that there were women serving the Eucharist. Another thing that surprised me too has to do with women preaching. And so one of the things that surprised me, especially in the 19th century, 18th and 19th century America, I have a chapter on women preachers in America. And so I was surprised that there were about 100 women between 1740 and 1840 that we have their names. And we know that they were part of the First Great Awakening and the Second Great Awakening, these movements where some of those distinguishing factors of setting people apart, male and female, black and white, rich and poor, some of those boundaries got more blurred during some of those great awakenings, as it was just the movement of the Spirit was the thing that really counted. And so if the Spirit was moving and you felt called to preach, but you're a woman in lots of those churches that were revivalist churches, that was considered acceptable at that time. And so you do see, like I said, about 100 women, we have their names. And so there were probably more than that, but those are the ones that we have their names. And there were twice as many over in England during this same time period that were just out there preaching, telling about the good news of Jesus, telling about what Jesus had done in their lives, inviting other people to the faith. And so I was just surprised at the numbers that there were that many, because again, you just sort of get the feeling like, oh, well, this is just something that happened like because of the feminist movement in the 20th century, that that's when the churches began allowing women to preach. But no, you actually see women preaching all over the place in the 19th century, just like in the early days of the church as well. Or in some of these, what we ended up finding in our research was that often in those initial movements of the Spirit type of moments, before all the bureaucratic structures get in place, there's often more room for women to take on leadership roles, such as preaching. So that was interesting to me and a surprise.
I'd love to bring this into our day and our context. When I say our, it's obviously a very broad our, right? When I speak about the church in the West, there's any number of different contexts, both denominational and local, that are presenting to people. So the hour is fairly broad, I recognize. Mm-hmm. And yet I do think that there is an interest that many of our listeners would have about men and women collaborating in Christian mission. I really do think that people want them to be working together. And they might have different theological persuasions. They might have different convictions. They might read scripture differently from the way that you and I would and whatever else. And yet they would still have a desire for men and women to collaborate well in Christian mission. I'd love for you to reflect on some applications that we might have through your research. As you saw women engaged in leadership, engaged in serving in Christian mission, what are some of the lessons that we might be able to apply today that would help men and women serve alongside and really collaborate well one with another in Christian mission in the 21st century?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think the first thing I would say there is just recognizing the diversity. You know, not assuming that, oh, well, you're man, you must do mission in this way, and you're woman, you must do mission in this way. I mean, we did write a book on women in the mission of the church, but one of the things that we found was that women were serving the church and they were serving God in such a diverse array of ways. And so I think that is one lesson that I would love to see people take into the present. I think all too often, at least especially in the culture that I know, which is 21st century America, being raised in churches where there's like one box of this is what it means to be a Christian woman. You know, it means you get married, you have kids, you're the one who needs to be presiding over the home. Your husband needs to be the one that's working outside the home. At least this was the community that a lot of my students have come from. And so when they have read these stories and they're like, oh my goodness, I had no idea that there were so many women that didn't get married and that that was actually deemed much more honoring to God for most of the history of the church. Like that was a huge revelation to them. And so that's something that I would love to see brought into the world today. Like, look, okay, you're a Christian woman, you're a Christian man. That doesn't mean you have to get married. There are so many stories of monks and nuns and priests and missionaries who have served God while single. And they were still like just as much a man or just as much a woman, even though they didn't embody, you know, some of our culture's understanding of what that looks like. That said, I think another really a place that I find a lot of interest in is the role of Christian parenting. So when you talk about where can men and women partner well together, that is something that I care deeply about. This book didn't go into it a great deal, but it's an interest that I have, and that is just the Christian home. Like, what does it mean to have a Christian home? Again, does it mean like, oh, the man has to be the one providing by the way of like a paycheck? Or does it mean that there's a diverse array of ways that men can serve their wives and wives can serve their husbands? And it might not be just one way that our culture defines. Yeah, so the Christian home is another place where I just think people serving each other and submitting to one another within the home, that's far more important than who makes the money or who cleans the bathroom or who cooks the dinner. Like those are things to me that can be so interchangeable depending on gifting. And that as I look in the history again, or when I look in scripture, I don't think it necessarily says like, here's the task associated with woman. Here's the task associated with man. It tells us about certain times and places, but it doesn't necessarily prescribe for all times and places. So that's kind of like a really big takeaway for me is to just see the diversity. Some people are preachers, some people are homemakers, some people are teachers, and we don't have to tie these things to specific genders.
One of the quotes I recently came along from Martin Luther was that anytime a man is involved in the bathing and washing and changing of his children, he said, others might look on and have a sneer, but he said, the Lord and his angels are smiling with delight. Right? Mm-hmm. It's the act of service, right? Like,
yeah.
So in my own studies for leadership, I mean, you can think of what service as a kind of manipulation, right? You serve in order to be served or in order to achieve an outcome that you're after. But there's a difference between that and then serving out of the freedom that's been given to you as one who's in a mission, right? And so I love the title of the book, Women in the Mission of the Church, because it reflects that this was their act of service to the church, that there was something bigger than them, that they were giving their weight, that they were giving their gifts and attention to. And likewise, whenever you shift the context, the family is bigger than just the parents and the family is bigger than just the children. And so how do we mutually serve one another so that the mission of the family is going on? And then, of course, you can even extrapolate that out, that the family finds its own mission in the church. The family finds its mission in the Christian movement so that the Christian family is given to the faith going on, the faith being worked into the society in which it's found. That posture of service is one that can start to form a real philosophy in leadership and how one governs a family and how one governs an organization. There's any number of different applications, but I find that is such a good reminder that if the mission comes first, then I'm always, even if it's a role of leadership, that still has to be an act of service and a posture of service. How can I be for the other person so that they in turn can be for whoever has been entrusted to them and whatever area of responsibility has been given to them to lead well in and to serve well in.
Yeah, totally.
Joining us today has been Dr. Annika Stassen. Annika is Associate Professor of Humanities and History here at Indiana Wesleyan University. And she and Leanne Dubinsky are the authors of Women in the Mission of the Church, published by Baker Academic. Annika, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today on the Wesley Seminary podcast.
You are welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You make conversations like this possible. The Wesley Seminary podcast exists to introduce topics and resources for fruitful ministry, and we trust that we have had a breath of fresh air and encouraging word, perhaps for you to pick up the calling, to sense something that you see needs to better reflect the coming kingdom of our Lord and how His Holy Spirit might be empowering you to take action and service, maybe even just after the example of one like Ida B. Wells. We trust that the episode today has done just what it's intended to do. Thank you, Connor, for being such a great producer and your editing work. Appreciate being in partnership in this project with you. Thank you, listeners. Thank you again, Annika. Trust you all to have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.